Welcome to Medscape. I'm Dr. Andrew Wilner, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Barbara Jobst. Dr. Jobst is an epileptologist and professor of neurology at Dartmouth Medical School in Hanover, New Hampshire. Dr. Jobst, thanks for joining us. And we have the opportunity today to talk about a recent publication of yours in Epilepsia about RNS. So let's start by talking about what is RNS.
Okay, the RNS is actually an implanted device for epilepsy. It is actually implanted into the skull and has two leads that go into the brain where the seizure onset is of the patient. The doctor who implants it needs to know where the seizure starts in this particular patient. Then the device will record EEG in the brain, and it will screen the EEG. And whenever it sees a seizure, it will stimulate to basically alternate the seizure. It will also stimulate if it sees abnormal brain activity. The device has been in testing for a long, long time. We started testing it in around 2005, and ran initial studies where it has been shown that it reduces seizure frequency in those patients. And it was finally approved in 2013 by the FDA for general commercial use, and since then is commercially available and is approved for patients who have partial onset seizures that are not controlled by regular medications.
Now, how did you learn so much about RNS? What's your experience?
So we were a part of the initial trials, which were done in many centers around the U.S., to test the device in the patients, whether it's effective or not, and later on also participated in follow-up studies, and this is how I learned about the device.
And now, what has the device taught us about seizures?
So the device is in generally, a very cool device. So the device does record intracranial EEG constantly, but only saves snippets of it. So it has taught us a lot what intracranial EEG looks like in patients who are walking around in their normal life, while we only used to get this in patients while they were strapped into the video EEG monitoring unit and just had surgery, and we could only do it for a few days. Now we can do it for years on end, and we also see the seizures in their natural, in the patient's natural life and environment. We also get data over years, and we have also learned with that interesting things. Usually when we traditionally did only do this in the epilepsy unit, we only can monitor for like 10 or 14 days. And it could have been that a patient only had, for example, seizures out of the left side of his brain. And now with doing this prolonged monitoring, we may see patients who then out of a sudden also develop seizures out of the right side of the brain, or vice versa. So we have also in terms, because we were able to monitor so long, we were able to learn a lot about what the EEG looks like and also what actual seizures look like in patients. We also learned that often seizures are not reported by patients, even though we see them on the EEG. So there's a lot we learned from the device.
I have a specific question. Sometimes patients will tell you, you know, I have this feeling that I'm going to have a seizure soon. You know, not an aura where they're going to have it right away, but a prodrome. Is there such a thing? Can you see the prodrome on the intracranial recordings? Are there changes, or is it still something that needs to be further defined electrically?
I think it needs to be further defined, and kind of always is difficult to say what patients really feel. It could, of course, be that patients who have hours before their seizures more epileptiform activity, and they may feel something, but we haven't run a study where we really looked systematically at that within those patients. So I can't give you a definite answer on that.
Well, this sounds like a major project to install the responsive neurostimulator in a particular patient. Who would be a proper candidate?
So how it usually works, or how this comes to an RNS. So first of all, it needs to be made sure that the patient is somebody who has focal epilepsy. That means that the seizure started a certain area in the brain. The patient should not have more than two seizure foci. So the seizures should not start in more than two places somewhere in the brain, and we need to know these two places. So how this usually works is the patient who has failed at least two medications at sufficient doses with medications should be referred to an epilepsy center to be evaluated for epilepsy surgery. And with that, they usually in the epilepsy center will assure that the patient has partial seizures, and whether he has one or more seizure foci. If the patient has only one seizure focus and it can be resected with epilepsy surgery, then surgery should be performed. However, there may be limitations to that. For example, the focus cannot be resected because it is in the language area, because it is in the motor area, because the patient does have two instead of one seizure focus, or for example, the seizures come out of the left and right temporal lobe. So these are ideal candidates for the responsive neurostimulator. So they usually should go through a surgical workup, and then with that, if no surgery can be performed, then thinking about the RNS.
So if a physician has a patient with intractable epilepsy who's failed medical therapy, I guess step one should be to find a comprehensive epilepsy center nearby, let them see if the patient is a surgical candidate, which is certainly preferable, right? I mean, if you can cure the patient with surgery, that's where you want to go. So this is kind of a backup plan for patients who are not surgical candidates, but they need something to help them with control their seizures.
Or patients who already had surgery and it did not work. That these are like quite a significant amount of patients in our study actually had previous surgery.
So I guess the next question is, well, how well does it work?
So how well does it work? So it definitely works, and it reduces seizure frequency, and that comes to the two studies that were just published. So we now published basically the long-term data on the initial patients that were in the study. One publication is about seizures that originate in the neocortical area, that means in the frontal lobes, in the lateral areas of the temporal lobe, in the occipital and parietal lobes. And the other one was a study where we looked at mesial temporal lobe seizures only. So coming to the first group, which is just the patients who had seizures from the neocortical area, so there we followed 126 patients. We followed them for 6.5 years. And if we divide them up by those lobes, that about 70% of the patients with frontal and, no, that's wrong. the median seizure reduction was 70% in the frontal and parietal seizure patients.
Well, that's a whole lot better than epilepsy drugs, right? I mean, usually you don't get a 70% reduction in these intractable patients.
Right. So usually adding on a new medication doesn't give you a 70% seizure reduction. The temporal neocortical and the multilobar onsets are between 51 and 58%. And what's really important that we want to not only reduce seizures, we want to make patients seizure-free. So there were about a quarter of the patients who were seizure-free for 6 months and about 14% that were seizure-free for about a year. And of course, patients who had a lesion on the MRI, so basically we knew a little better where the seizures were coming from, had a better outcome than the ones where we didn't know it as well with normal MRIs. So the one with lesions had about a 70% seizure reduction. The one with MRI had a 45% seizure reduction. So that is with patients with neocortical onset. We did a similar study in patients with a mesial temporal lobe onset, similar amount of follow-up of 6 years, and the results are very similar, that the median percent seizure reduction was 70%, and also a quarter were seizure-free for more than 6 months. So this is the outcome, which is quite good. So, any other questions?
I think it's interesting that the anti-seizure effect seems to be enduring over time. Often with medications, we find the patients do well initially, but then over time, they need a different one. But with this neuromodulation therapy, they actually seem to do better over time.
Right. So we have observed that in several studies, and it's actually a general finding in any neuromodulation study that over time the seizures actually decrease. So the longer that you go, the more the seizures decrease. That could be that over time the neuromodulation changes the physiology of the brain and your overall decrease the seizure threshold. With this device, as it's a very sophisticated device and you have to really program the device to the patient's specific seizures, there's also a learning curve initially how to do this the best. So that may also have contributed in those long-term studies to better outcomes, but we still have to study that further, why this effect really is, that this neuromodulation, you have better outcomes with time.
So you're not off the hook. You're going to be writing the 10-year outcome and the 15-year outcome.
Yeah. Generally not off the hook because we want ideally 100% seizure-free. So we have to learn more, and we can learn certainly more from what we record and how to stimulate and how to do that differently. That's the next step.
Well, Dr. Jobes, I want to thank you very much for teaching us about responsive neurostimulation, which is an FDA-approved therapy for intractable epilepsy. I'm Dr. Andrew Wilner, and thank you for sharing your experience with Medscape.
Thank you very much.